The 11th Sunday of Ordinary Time. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 9, verse 36 to chapter 10, verse 8. When Jesus saw the crowds, he felt sorry for them, because they were harassed and dejected, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is rich, but the laborers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest to send laborers to his harvest." He summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits, with power to cast them out and to cure all kinds of diseases and sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and his brother Andrew. James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. Philip and Bartholomew. Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector. James, the son of Alphaeus. And Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who was to betray him. These 12 Jesus sent out, instructing them as follows. "Do not turn your steps to pagan territory, and do not enter any Samaritan town. Go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, proclaim that the kingdom of heaven is close at hand. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out devils. You received without charge, give without charge."
Jesus, in Galilee with the 12, says that it is time for them to take on more responsibility for evangelizing. Peter, somewhat overawed, sighs. "The more we have to do, the more the world seems to be widening out, scattering villages and increasing distances. I never realized that Galilee was so large." And Jesus replies, "You are right, Peter. I feel sorry as well for these souls and this people. The fact that many of them may not find me at a certain moment may be the cause of irreparable misfortunes. Look how tired and bewildered are those who are not yet certain of my truth. And look how hungry are those who have already tasted my word and can no longer go without it. No other word can satisfy them. They look like sheep without a shepherd, wandering about without finding anyone who may lead them and pasture them. I will see to them, but you must help me with all your spiritual, moral, and physical strength. You will no longer have to go around in large groups, but in couples. And we will also send the best disciples, two by two, because the harvest is really rich. Oh, I will prepare you in summer for this great mission. By the month of Tammuz, Isaac," and Jesus is referring to one of his shepherd disciples, "he will follow us with his best disciples, and I will prepare you. But even so, you will not be enough, because the harvest is really rich, but the laborers are few. So pray the Lord of the harvest to send many laborers to his harvest. Those who are one with me will be able to do what I do, and the poor will be helped in all their miseries. But you do not have as yet what is required to do that. Endeavor to overcome yourselves, to trample on your humanity, and so let your spirit triumph. Absorb not only my word, but the spirit of it. That is, sanctify yourselves through it, and then you will be able to do everything." At another time, after spending some days with the 12 in a remote place, Jesus calls them together. They all sit down quietly, like good children, all engrossed in their internal world, and yet paying attention to Jesus as they never did before. Jesus says, Do you know what I have done to you? You all know. Your souls told your minds. But your souls, which were the queens these past days, have taught your minds two great virtues, humility and silence. Silence being the son of humility and prudence, which are the daughters of charity. Only 8 days ago, you would have come to proclaim your cleverness and your new knowledge like clever children who are eager to astound people and overcome their rivals. Now you are silent. You have grown from children into adolescents, and you are already aware that such a proclamation might humiliate a companion who was perhaps less helped by God, and therefore you do not speak. God reveals himself in his fullness to the pure. Firstly, because he takes delight in giving himself to those who are pure, as he, the most pure one, finds part of himself in the creature free from lust. And secondly, because he wishes to compensate the creature for what it denies itself for his love. I solemnly tell you that because of the love I have for you and of the wisdom I possess, if I did not have to accomplish the work of the Father, I would keep you here. But I cannot. I must go, and you must go. The world is waiting for us. The desecrated and desecrating world, which needs teachers and redeemers, is waiting for us. We shall go to the world for the sake of holy charity, that by my order is sending you to the world as it sent me. But I implore you, lock in your hearts, like a pearl in a coffer, the treasure of the past days, in which you have examined, cured, elevated, renovated, and united yourselves to God. As from today, you are no longer my favourite disciples, but the apostles, the chiefs of my church. All the hierarchies of the church throughout centuries shall descend from you and will call you masters, having as their master your God in his treble power, wisdom, and charity. I have not chosen you because you are the most worthy, but for a number of reasons that you need not know now. I have chosen you in place of the shepherds who have been my disciples since I was born. Why did I do this? Because it was right to do so. Among you there are Galileans and Judeans, learned and unlearned, rich and poor people. And that is because of the world, that it may not say that I have chosen one category only. But you will not be sufficient for everything there is to be done, neither now nor later. Woe betide the apostle who falls. He drags many disciples with him, and they drag a greater number of believers. And the ruin grows larger and larger, like a falling avalanche, or a ring that expands on the lake when several stones are thrown in the same spot. Will you all be perfect? No. Will the spirit of the present moment last? No. The world will throw its tentacles to choke your souls. That will be the victory of the world, to extinguish the light in the hearts of saints. The world is a son of Satan for 5/10, a servant of Satan for 3 more/10, indifferent to God for the remaining 2/10. Defend yourselves from yourselves, against yourselves, and against the world, the flesh, and the demon. Above all, defend yourselves from yourselves. Stand on your guard, my children, against pride, sensuality, duplicity, tepidity, spiritual drowsiness, and against avarice. Some time later, Jesus is again with his apostles in Capernaum. He leads them to an olive grove just beyond the village and says to them, "The hour of evangelization has come. I am about halfway through my public life, preparing hearts for my kingdom. It is now time that my apostles also take part in the preparation of this kingdom. That is what kings do when they decide to conquer a kingdom. First, they make investigations and approach people to find out their reaction and win them to the plan they're pursuing. Later, they enlarge their preparatory work by means of reliable messengers sent to the country to be conquered. And they send more and more of them until all the geographical and moral details of the whole country are known. After that, the king completes his work by proclaiming himself king of that country and being crowned as such. And much blood is shed for its achievement, because victories always cost blood. "We're ready to fight for you and shed our blood," promise all the apostles as one. And Jesus tells them, "I will shed no blood but that of the Holy One and of saints." Jesus looks at his 12 apostles one by one. He smiles and continues, "So I have decided to send you so that you may penetrate further ahead and more widely than I can do by myself. You are not as yet perfected to the point of being able to approach anyone without being damaged or without damaging. Least of all, you are not heroic to the extent of defying the world on behalf of the idea, facing the revenge of the world. So, when you go about preaching me, do not go among the Gentiles and do not enter the towns of the Samaritans, but go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. There is so much to be done amongst them, because I solemnly tell you that the crowds that you think are so numerous around me are the hundredth part of those who are still waiting for the Messiah in Israel. And they do not know him, neither do they know that he is living amongst them. Take to them faith in me and the knowledge of me. On your way, preach, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is near.' Let that be your basic announcement, supporting all your preaching. You have heard me speak so much of the kingdom. All you need to do is to repeat what I told you. But man, to be attracted by and convinced of spiritual truth, needs material kindness. As if he were an eternal boy who will not study a lesson or learn a trade unless he is attracted by a sweet from his mother or a reward from his schoolmaster or trade tutor. In order to let you have the means to be believed and sought after, I will grant you the gift of working miracles." The apostles, with the exception of James of Alphaeus and John, jump to their feet, shouting, protesting, becoming excited, each reacting according to his temperament. Really, the only one strutting about at the idea of working miracles is the Iscariot, who, with the foolhardiness of false and selfishly motivated interest, exclaims, "It was time we should do that, to have the least authority over the crowds." Jesus looks at him but does not say anything. Peter and the zealot, who were saying, "No, Lord, we're not worthy of so much. That is due to saints." They contradict Judas. The zealot says, "Why do you take the liberty of reproaching the master, you silly, proud man?" And Peter adds, "The least authority? And what do you want to do more than work miracles? Do you want to become God as well? Have you got the same itch as Lucifer had?" "Silence," orders Jesus, and he continues. "There is one thing that is even greater than miracles and equally convinces the crowds, but more deeply and durably, a holy life. But you are far from that. And you, Judas, are further than the rest. but let me speak, because my instruction is a long one. Go therefore, curing sick people, cleansing lepers, raising bodies and spirits from the dead. Because bodies and spirits can be sick, leprous, and dead as well. And you are already aware how a miracle is worked through a life of penance, fervent prayer, sincere desire to glorify the power of God, deep humility, living charity, burning faith, and through a hope that no kind of difficulty can upset. I solemnly tell you that everything is possible to those who have such virtues. Demons also will flee before the name of the Lord, pronounced by you, if you have within you what I said. That power is given to you by me and by our Father. No money can buy it. Only our will grants it. Only a just life keeps it. As it is given to you gratuitously, so gratuitously give it to others, to the needy. Woe betide you if you depreciate the gift of God by using it to fatten your purse. It is not your power, it is the power of God. Make use of it, but do not take possession of it, saying, "It is mine." As it is given to you, so it can be taken away from you. Simon of Jonah, a little while ago, said to Judas of Simon, "Have you got the same itch as Lucifer?" He gave a correct definition. To say, "I do what God does because I am like God," is to imitate Lucifer, and his punishment is well known. Equally known is what happened to the two ancestors who, in the earthly paradise, ate the forbidden fruit through instigation of the envious one, who wanted to imprison more unhappy souls in his hell, besides the rebellious angels already there. But these two ancestors also did this through their own itch of perfect pride. The only fruit you are allowed to take from what you do are the souls whom you will conquer for the Lord by means of the miracle, and who are to be given to the Lord. That is your money, nothing else. You will enjoy your treasure in the next life. Maria Valtorta writes, "The age of 12 was prescribed by the law in order for a Jewish boy to become a son of the law. And Jesus, faithful to the law, wanted 12 apostles as followers because that number was sacred. For if one rotten branch later fell and the new plant was left with just 11 branches, a new 12th branch soon appeared on the plant of Christianity and the sacred number was re-established. How many sacred numbers there were in Israel, and each with its symbol, which was later transferred to the new church. 3, 7, 12, 72. And in the future times there will shine forth the truth about the numbers which are still obscure, that are contained in the Apocalypse. These numbers stand for infinite perfection and holiness, and for impiety, which is also without measure."